Public Media. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. As we've discussed on the program before, Illinois has become something of a haven for abortion access in the Midwest in recent years. That has not, however, taken away from how opponents of abortion feel about it. Take, for example, last weekend when a man in Danville was arrested and accused of plotting to set fire to a prospective abortion clinic there. He had backed his car, stocked with extra containers of gasoline, into the building entrance, allegedly. Even so, 2019's Reproductive Health Act set in law the, quote, fundamental right to use or refuse reproductive health care. It also says individuals have the right to make autonomous decisions about their reproductive health. But some state lawmakers say anti-abortion pregnancy centers are using deceptive practices to deter pregnant people from getting an abortion. That's where legislation approved by both houses in the Illinois General Assembly comes in. The bill is waiting on Governor J.B. Pritzker's signature. It would apply a pre-existing law, the Consumer Fraud and Deceptive Business Practices Act, to the abortion industry. We'll be looking at this legislation from three different perspectives today. A bit later, we'll get some more thoughts on the bill and what it would do from someone with an organization that supports the legislation. And we'll also talk with a legal expert who will help us look at the First Amendment lawsuit that's being threatened if the bill becomes law. I should mention now, and I'll say it again later, we did invite a number of crisis pregnancy centers to join us on the program today. They either did not respond or declined to join us. But we're going to start with the legislation itself. And to help us do that, we're joined by Angie Leventis-Lurgos, who's a staff writer at the Chicago Tribune. She co-wrote an article about this last week with Hank Sanders. Angie, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And listeners, you can join our conversation at any time today by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. Maybe you've had an experience with a crisis pregnancy center yourself. What do you think of this legislation? 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation. All right, Angie, pregnancy centers, crisis pregnancy centers, limited practice facilities, they go by many different names, but big picture, I want to talk about how they operate. So let's say I was to visit one of these centers. What might I see?
I think it depends a lot on which location you go to. Some are very different. I've been to some to do interviews. Occasionally, you'll go inside and see families who are picking up car seats, sometimes picking up diapers. Sometimes they settle right next to abortion providers in Illinois and across the country in the hopes of dissuading folks from terminating a pregnancy and instead carrying the pregnancy to term. Sometimes you'll see people coming up to folks heading into abortion facilities and trying to dissuade them. It kind of depends on the nonprofit that you're talking about
and what their specific aims are. All right, so there's been an increase in abortions in Illinois since the Roe versus Wade was overturned last year, particularly people traveling from out of state. Have pregnancy centers also been growing, seeing more people?
I'm not sure if there's been an increase in the number of pregnancy centers. There have been a lot even prior to the end of Roe v. Wade. So I'm not sure if there's been an increase or if they've had an increase in clientele. I'm not certain.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about what sort of tactics this is, I'll use the terminology of the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. They say misleading practices have some people accused some of these centers of using.
So the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists lists on its website actions that it feels are deceptive that some anti-abortion pregnancy centers use. And those include showing like inflammatory photographs or images, saying things about the procedure that many health professionals would say aren't like either factually incorrect or are inflammatory, about a procedure that most healthcare professionals would say is very safe, particularly in this country. There are other tactics that sources that I've had have discussed. Anything that's considered a lie or a misrepresentation about your appointment or where you're supposed to go, having somebody who's not a clinician try to diagnose you or tell you how far you are, not stating the organization that they're with. Those are things that I've either heard of or are listed as potential deceptive practices by these groups. Again, I want to state that not every nonprofit behaves the same way and not every individual behaves the same way. And I'm not aiming to malign any individual group or an organization.
No, it's an important distinction. I'm glad you brought that out. So can you share some of the people have talked to you, some of the experiences in your reporting that, that people have had with these centers, maybe good and bad?
So I did a story a couple of years ago where I talked to a woman who had really positive experiences at a pregnancy center. And she's somebody who identifies as being pro-choice. She actually believes anybody should have the right to make whatever decision about their own healthcare. That should be an individual's decision. But for her, I think she really wanted someone to tell her that she could do this, that she could have the baby under circumstances that weren't ideal. And she raved about the care that she received and the help that she received. I have had other people say that it delays care or that individuals will try to dissuade them and they felt intimidated by, there's often folks sometimes surrounding abortion facilities that go up to patients and try to talk to them and try to encourage them to seek other means. And sometimes people feel very intimidated by that. Sometimes people feel very angry by that approach. They're often called sidewalk counselors by abortion or by the anti-abortion movement. And I've had a lot of people tell me that it made their experience either terminating a pregnancy or seeking some other form of health care that just happens to be at an abortion provider, either like birth control, going for a mammogram, things like that, that it makes the experience very difficult, and the emotions they felt were anger and sometimes shame. So I've heard a range of experiences and reactions.
So with all that in mind, what would this legislation actually do, right? What provisions, what avenues of recourse does it create for people who are affected by this?
The legislation states that it seeks to prevent fraud, deception, or false pretense, misleading actions. Now, what that means in actuality, I think we'll have to see how the law plays out and if there are any court cases or if people do file lawsuits and try to use this law as an avenue. If you're found to have violated the law, the fines could be up to $50,000. And that's outside of any other legal recourse people might take in other avenues.
What are supporters of this legislation hoping it will accomplish? I mean, are they trying to put some of these centers out of business or something else?
The folks who I've talked to have tried to make it clear that they're not targeting or trying to shut down centers, but they are trying to target deceptive behaviors and tactics that are misleading or fraudulent.
And
so it's the actions, not not other behaviors that maybe like giving out free diapers or trying to provide support to folks who are pregnant, that's not what's being targeted.
And what about the arguments against this legislation, particularly from those pregnancy centers that would be affected?
Folks who are anti-abortion who I've spoken with are concerned that this could chill the First Amendment rights of folks, especially those who are outside clinics, who are, you know, either protesting or who are approaching patients who are expressing their First Amendment rights, that this could infringe upon those. There's also concern that how is this going to be interpreted? How are courts going to interpret it? How are lawmakers interpreting it? What does it actually mean when it plays out? What is a deceptive practice? What is fraudulent? What is false pretense? And I think that still remains to be seen.
All right, Angie, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st Show. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Angie Leventis-Lurgos is a staff writer at the Chicago Tribune talking about legislation that would essentially crack down on pregnancy centers engaging in what backers of the legislation characterize as fraudulent practices in Illinois. If you're just joining us, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we're now going to turn to an organization that often deals with women and others who've dealt with firsthand with pregnancy centers. Allison Dreith is Director of Strategic Partnerships with the Midwest Access Coalition, an abortion fund that helps people traveling to, from, and within the Midwest. Allison, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Sure. And it's Brian. Steve's our engineer, but thank you. That's all right. It happens. We spoke with Angie just a few moments ago about the sort of practices these pregnancy clinics have engaged in. Can you say more about that? What sort of experiences have people who've come to your fund have had with pregnancy centers?
Yeah, our staff has had a lot of interactions with clients who have been confused maybe before their abortion procedure and where they were actually scheduling an appointment at, or even some of those tactics with the sidewalk counseling that Angie mentioned, where clients have pulled up to their abortion appointment and have been confused and deceived into going into a crisis pregnancy center that's maybe located next to the abortion clinic itself, and have been convinced to go to this totally different building that they had anticipated to.
And how does that affect people's ability to get abortion care when that's what they're interested in?
Yeah, it's certainly, a traumatic experience, especially if they're arriving to a clinic and then being kind of moved somewhere else. We had a young person who was the age of 18 who had to get third trimester support in Maryland several years ago and was with their parent as they arrived to care clinic in Maryland. And at that time, there were a lot of protesters outside, and they were kind of moved to the building next door. And the mother was separated from her kid that she was supporting. And the mother began screaming, give me my daughter back. And quickly realized that she was in a place that they didn't want to be. So it can be traumatizing. As Angie mentioned, it can also delay care. We've even seen on an ultrasound machine that those sometimes those are being used as like a fake tape. One of the kind of tactics is to show someone further along in their pregnancy so that they opt to not have an abortion, which can be really, dangerous in a country that has the infant and maternal mortality rates that the United States does. And I want to say, in the last 2 years, we had even a Lyft driver who's wife worked at a crisis pregnancy center, and instead of taking the client to the abortion clinic where their appointment was, tried to divert her away to the CPC to talk to his wife first. So it's horrifying to think about what could potentially happen to someone when they're being dissuaded from the necessary and time-sensitive healthcare they seek.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And your group, the Midwest Access Coalition, works, I imagine, with a lot of people from marginalized groups who maybe, have, it's a financial challenge to be able to travel significant distances for an abortion, as a lot of people in neighboring states are having to do these days. How does that affect people from those groups in particular?
Yeah, I think, you know, some people, like Angie mentioned, I spent over a decade of my abortion movement work in Missouri. I'm now in Illinois, but, you know, the whole time I lived in Missouri, there was 97 fake clinics listed in the state, but only one abortion provider. And so it was really confusing for clients where, you know, a Planned Parenthood or Hope Clinic for Women would have one billboard on the interstate, and then the rivalry CPC would have, you know, a mirrored billboard on the other side of the street, as though they were open for all pregnancy options. And so people oftentimes have, you know, showed us the challenges they face with CPCs, but we've also had clients who kind of use crisis pregnancy centers to their own advantage. I think in the last 10 years, there has been a lot of education done about the harmful practices of crisis pregnancy centers as these fake clinics. And so some people have been smart enough to turn that on their head and, as Angie mentioned, are totally pro-choice, but also can, you know, hustle some free diapers or whatever for the children that they are already parenting.
Interesting.
It'll go to the abortion.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. We're going to have to take a break and we'll continue this conversation. We're talking with Allison Dreith from the Midwest Access Coalition. Stay with us. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about Illinois legislation that has passed through both chambers of the Illinois General Assembly, House and Senate. It's awaiting action from the governor. It would, in essence, crack down on pregnancy centers that might engage in what the sponsors call fraudulent practices in Illinois. These are not abortion centers, but they are often near clinics that provide abortions, and they try to steer clients away from seeking abortion care. We're talking about this right now with Allison Dreith, who's Director of Strategic Partnerships with the Midwest Access Coalition, an abortion fund, and one of the organizations that supports this legislation. A little bit later in the program, we'll be diving into some of the arguments against it. If you have questions or thoughts about this, we invite you to call in at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Allison, one of the claims that was made on this legislation in committee was that the arguments in favor of it are anecdotal, right? You mentioned a case you'd heard about somebody using a fake ultrasound machine that showed a pregnancy much farther along. Or I don't know if you said much, but farther along than it actually was, that there have not been complaints filed with the Illinois Attorney General, and therefore these claims of deceptive business practices are unfounded. What do you make of that, especially obviously, bearing in mind the stories you shared? And Allison, are you with us or maybe muted on our Zoom connection? All right, we are going to attempt to reestablish our connection with Allison there. And I'll just remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We are talking about legislation that's pending in the Illinois General Assembly that has to do with these crisis pregnancy centers. We are joined now by Allison Dreith, who is with the Midwest Access Coalition. Allison, are you back with us now?
Yes, sure I am, Brian.
Okay, great. And I'm sorry. Sorry, we had a little Zoom malfunction, a little operator error on our part, I think. But basically, my question is, when this legislation was being debated in committee in the Illinois General Assembly, there was an argument that the basis for this is mostly anecdotal, right? There haven't been complaints filed with the Attorney General, and therefore claims of deceptive business practices are unfounded. What do you make of that?
I don't think that's true, actually. Before I came to work at Midwest Access Coalition, I was actually the deputy director of Hope Clinic for Women in Granite City, Illinois. And I had been involved or been in conversations with the ACLU in Illinois and Representative Kelly Cassidy, who passed on my messages to the Attorney General's office. And I did ultimately speak to someone there right before I left about another one of the arms of crisis pregnancy centers that Angie mentioned, of the sidewalk counselors and these people who try to redirect folks outside of clinics. At Hope Clinic, there was a longtime protester named Angela who had a little RV that she supposedly did ultrasounds out of. She would dress up in scrubs as she was trying to deceive our patients that she was indeed a healthcare professional and, you know, trying to get people into her RV to do those ultrasounds. Then there was another woman who picked up a ultrasound machine apparently from a local church and was trying to do ultrasounds out of her Buick and telling clinics or clients, abortion clients, especially under COVID when we were social distancing and having people wait in their cars before they entered the facility to keep distance from each other, that, you know, the new protocol was to check in for the clinic outside. And so the Attorney General's office has absolutely heard about this issue. And because the issue of the First Amendment and crisis pregnancy centers has already reached federal courts, has, you know, been debated at the Supreme Court, and California's law that regulated CPCs was overturned at the highest federal court in the country, I have every confidence that the AG in Illinois knows what he's doing to actually stop some of these deceptive practices. You know, as Angie mentioned, nobody's trying to shut them down. It is just a health and safety hazard for clients to be getting healthcare from people who aren't trained, aren't qualified, and in these conditions that may or may not be sanitary and aren't regulated whatsoever.
Maybe this is an opportunity to shed some light on how these things work in practice. I imagine that there are people out there who are thinking, look, you know, abortion centers, maybe pressure women who aren't quite certain that this is what they want into doing. No, exactly. Well, then I want you to address that, because I think there are probably some listeners who are thinking, hey, this is the other side gets to have that, you know, maybe they can have their say. Talk about that. How do you deal with a client, a prospective client, or a client who maybe isn't 100% sure this is what they want to do? How do you work them through that?
Well, all patients in Illinois, and, you know, I think generally throughout the country, you know, go through an informed consent process that includes counseling, and that if any abortion patient shows any kind of apprehension to the procedure that they're about to have, the clinic will turn them away and tell them to, you know, they can't, you know, in good conscience, let them go with the through with the procedure that day and make them come back when they're more sure of their decision. Equally so, clinics are staffed with social workers and provide resources for adoption services or further counseling or whatever a client says that they need. I think it really goes to show from today's story where the Thomas More Society and Crisis Pregnancy Centers were invited to be on the show and all denied that request because one side is speaking truth to power and one side is historically deceptive.
Is there a place for pregnancy centers to continue existing in Illinois under this legislation? Is there a place for people who genuinely maybe want that sort of experience to have it?
Yeah, I'm not one of those people, but I'm not going to stop them from operating if they feel that they have a service to provide and they're doing good for their communities, that they're providing diapers or helping with a maternity home situation or getting adoption services, whatever it is that, you know, the different nonprofits are offering as a service, you know, good on them. I think we need more resources for pregnant people, not less in this country, as we've seen maternity floors in rural hospitals close one after another due to, you know, lack of Medicaid expansion and healthcare in this country. And so I'm happy for anyone to give more resources to really vulnerable communities, but let's not do it based on a lie or healthcare that is not genuine.
Allison Dreith is Director of Strategic Partnerships with the Midwest Access Coalition. Thank you so much for your time today and talking with us about this.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
If you're just joining us, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're going to turn now to the arguments against this legislation on pregnancy centers, in particular the threats of a lawsuit if it's signed into law by Governor J.B. Pritzker. And before we should continue, I should note that we did contact five pregnancy centers across Illinois to see if they'd be willing to join our conversation. They either declined or did not respond to our invitation. We also reached out to the Thomas More Society, a public interest law firm rooted in the Catholic faith that has threatened a lawsuit if this bill becomes law. They also declined to join our conversation. But the Thomas More Society has detailed some of their legal objections to the legislation elsewhere, and so we're going to talk about their arguments. Here to help us think through this aspect of our conversation today, we are joined by Lena Shapiro, who is Clinical Assistant Professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign's College of Law, and more relevant to our conversation, she's also director of the law school's relatively new First Amendment Clinic. Professor Shapiro, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you so much, Brian.
So the Thomas More Society's arguments, one of their main arguments is that this legislation would violate the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution on the grounds of violating the rights of freedom of speech and freedom of religion. Can you just broadly and briefly remind us what each of those mean in this context?
Sure. I think this lawsuit will face certain constitutional challenges, one being that it's overly broad and vague, and sort of tied to that is the First Amendment violation. You know, the proponents of the bill have said that there is no speech requirement in this legislation, which, as I think the previous speaker noted, in 2018, the Supreme Court held unconstitutional a law in California that required certain disclosures at these CPC centers. So proponents of this legislation say that there's no requirement for speech, but the problem with that is it's sort of unclear what unfair or deceptive acts or practices are going to be pursued by the Illinois Attorney General in addition to this legislation. I mean, if it involves certain speech that's at issue or controversial or debated by both sides, that brings into a First Amendment issue, as are these CPCs required to make certain disclosures, or the Illinois Attorney General will pursue claims against them for deceptive acts or practices. And I think that's how that's likely to play out.
So I understand part of this may revolve around what's called false speech. And I'm sure, again, the Thomas More Society would probably say more about that and whether the tactics of these crisis pregnancy centers or CPCs constitute false speech. The Society did respond to some statistics in the legislation by saying, and I'm quoting from their website here, not only are those not facts, these items are hotly disputed between pro-life and pro-choice advocates, unquote. Taking a step back, under the First Amendment, what would be considered false speech, and is that protected?
False speech wouldn't be protected, but it's difficult to define what that actually is. You know, if there's two sides debating about when life begins or whether a fetus is a human being and what sort of disclosures are required to those that go to these CPCs, that's a topic that's debated, and I think that's difficult to discern. And certainly if one side, as the CPCs have said, that life begins at conception, or, you know, and we're going to advise the people that come into the CPC center accordingly, that I think would be protected under the First Amendment.
I do understand that fraud is a subcategory of false speech that can be restricted. Do you think that, I mean, is that possible that that could come into play here?
I think the Illinois Attorney General would certainly argue that some of the practices, you know, again, based on how the previous speaker described certain instances that happen at these crisis pregnancy centers occur. But, you know, it goes back to the question of who is going to define what fraud is, and is that definition going to infringe on the First Amendment rights of the workers at the CPC to say, you know, whatever position it is they're taking. I think it's highly fact specific, but that's the problem with the bill, that it's vague on what that will actually entail. And so it might be difficult for a CPC to understand when they would be infringing, they would be violating the law, and when they wouldn't.
So that's the speech aspect of this. There's also religious freedom separately listed in the First Amendment.
Yes.
And I guess the starting question here is, many of these centers are religiously affiliated. How does the freedom of religion enter into this conversation?
I think it's closely tied to the speech, and they certainly have, you know, the right, as the Supreme Court held in 2018, that there wasn't any right to compel speech for what the crisis pregnancy centers were doing. And so I think it's closely tied to their speech rights.
So with that in mind, we invited Peter Breen, who's vice president and senior counsel for the Thomas More Society, to join us. He wasn't able to make it today, but he did speak against this legislation in a House committee last month. We have a copy of his written testimony in which he asks, how is it constitutional at all to regulate religious advocacy on a public sidewalk or in a private facility, end quote. And I guess I would put that question to you. What answers do we have for that question?
So there's certainly different restrictions that are placed in public versus private speech. Because I'm wondering which one, I suppose, are you asking about?
Well, I guess, is it constitutional to regulate religious advocacy on a public sidewalk, as Mr. Breen said?
So you can regulate the time, place, and manner in which people give speech. That's allowed. It's certainly different. Those regulations would be different for private speech. But those, in terms of actually saying, you know, whether in a CPC, can those workers advocate their religious beliefs? I would say yes.
Interesting. So we're coming to the end of our time together, just about a minute remaining. Are there any other parts of the Constitution that you think could be relevant in a legal argument against this legislation?
I mentioned it at the beginning. I think this legislation would have an issue with being either overbroad or vague or both. You know, like I said, it's difficult to define what the deceptive practice would be, and I think the Illinois Attorney General is going to have some issues with that, but the law as a whole, before we even get to any claims brought by the Illinois Attorney General, the law as a whole seems to be either overbroad, vague, or both in terms of what language and what message the CPC centers are sending and whether that constitutes a deceptive practice, because it is so hotly debated and controversial.
Interesting. Well, this is an issue we will continue to follow here on the 21st show. Professor Lena Shapiro, director of the First Amendment Clinic at the University of Illinois College of Law. Professor Shapiro, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st show.
You're very welcome.